Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, June 16th. Extra project costs impact YWLA move. Inflation, supply chain are reasons for budget increasing by nearly $1 million over estimated cost. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD hoped to spend $950,000 on upgrades to the former Washington STEM campus to transform it into Young Women's Leadership Academy at Booker T. Washington. The MISD board found out this month the total will be nearly $1 million greater than the original cost estimate. Problems with increases in construction costs because of the supply chain issues and inflation are reasons for the cost increases, Midland ISD's Chief of Administrative Services, Kelly Spencer, told the Midland ISD board during a special meeting last week. The original opinion of probable cost for the project was about $950,000, Midland ISD reported. Quote, after receipt of the competitive seal proposals, Park Hill completed another evaluation of cost, which exceeded $1.1 million, end quote. Bids came in at $1.2 million and $2.1 million, and the district's intention was to award the project to the company submitting the lower bid, but that company was unable to provide the surety of bonding requirements, according to the district. Quote, instead of awarding the project to the company submitting the higher bid, administration decided to utilize job order contracting. LMC General Contractors will complete the work not to exceed $1.9 million. Renovations include the building of a chemistry lab, the addition of restroom and improvements to the parking lot. The increase in the price of concrete was another reason for the increased cost, district officials told the board. Midland ISD reported that the project will still take place on a schedule that allows the school to be on track for occupancy at the beginning of the school year. However, supply chain issues mean the chemistry facilities will not be ready for the upcoming school year. YWLA officials will adjust by offering physics instead of chemistry, officials said. Midland ISD officials also said there is enough money in the current year's fiscal budget to cover the additional costs. In January, district officials voted to move YWLA from its temporary classrooms on the Jones Elementary campus in Southwest Midland across town to the former Washington STEM campus in Southeast Midland. Washington STEM was closed because of low enrollment numbers and poor academic performance. Odessa without drinking water as temperatures soar. City provides bottled drinking water. People with wells offer neighbors water from hoses. Residents of the West Texas city of Odessa improvised emergency water supplies after a water system outage left them high and dry for days amid scorching heat, even as utility crews scrambled Wednesday to restore normal service. The city said taps in 165,000 homes and businesses lost pressure or went completely dry after a 24-inch main broke Monday afternoon. Odessa's water treatment plant was back online by about 8 a.m. Wednesday, but utility officials said it could take 12 to 14 hours to complete the recharging process, during which workers slowly add water back into the system to ensure there are no more leaks. Temperatures approached 100 degrees in Odessa on Wednesday as Texas and much of the United States faced extremely hot and humid conditions. And while the city typically sees hot weather in June, the timing of the break made dealing with this week's heat more difficult. Quote, I want to assure you that we're utilizing every resource at our disposal to ensure that we get this community back to the way it was before the massive line break, City Manager Michael Marrero said in a Facebook video posted Wednesday afternoon. He and Public Works Director Thomas Kerr again urged residents to boil tap water to kill any bacteria before consuming it. Resident Nikki Friday told the Associated Press that the city was providing bottled drinking water and that people with wells were offering neighbors water from hoses. She also said tanker trucks had been parked around town to fill buckets of water. Quote, drinking water has not been an issue, Friday said. We just need water to return to our daily lives and within the community, end quote. Lifelong Odessa resident Linda Wright said water service had not been lost across the city in the more than 5 decades that she has lived there. She said she picked up water and ice from Midland, a 15-minute drive from her home. Wright said she had drinkable water stored in jugs for washing hands and brushing teeth, and that her family hooked her house up to a well on her property to provide water to flush toilets. Quote, we just dropped a hose in the water line, she said. Wright said she noticed water began running again around noon, but that the pressure did not immediately return to regular strength. The city planned to distribute water to residents at Ector County Coliseum, as well as deliver water to nursing homes. Water tankers were placed strategically around the city to respond to any fires, said Deputy City Manager Philip Urrutia. Quote, it's an aging infrastructure that we're seeing. It's a cast iron pipe, so those are typically more susceptible to breaks than other new technologies like PVC pipe that's going in the ground, he said. Wright said the city must act to prevent another water emergency. Quote, I just hope that they kind of learned we need to get in there, we need to check those lines, and repair those that show signs of age and wear and tear, she said. Small Bites. Wall Street Bar and Grill remains Midland institution. Restaurant changes with times to flourish in business 41 years. The story was written by Iris Foster. Celebrating its 41st year is Wall Street Bar and Grill, located across from the downtown post office. As the advertisement reads, eat contemporary American fare served in a 1910 building with pressed tin ceilings and a mahogany bar. Originally established by a group of investors, Lisa Johnson purchased the restaurant in 2006. One of the first employees, manager Celinda Knight, has seen all of Midland's oil booms and busts since 1981. Although the ticker tape no longer scrolls stock prices along the ceiling, she says the restaurant caters to downtown office workers during the week. Lawyers and bankers still arrive in suits, and oil industry folks dress in what she calls West Texas casual. They come for lunch or for drinks and or dinner after work. As a former daytime bartender, she can call them by name. Bowing to the number of new downtown restaurants, manager Jamie Johnson said that on weekends, Wall Street is only open for Saturday dinner from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m., and for Sunday brunch from 10 a.m. until 2:30 p.m. Over the years, Celinda says, new seafood items like etouffees have been added to the menu. Cilantro chicken and tomatillo chicken are also crowd pleasers, topped by a legendary gold brick sundae. Like all restaurants, the staff made major adjustments to survive the pandemic. During a month-long closure in 2020, the restaurant was cleaned and refurbished. They tried takeout and to this day still prepare to-go orders, like the flavorful chicken-fried steaks and loaded baked potatoes we had last week, and curbside delivery if requested. Once reopened, Wall Street's fan-favorite Sunday salad bar had to pivot to become a sumptuous tray for each table. But, Celinda stressed, diners still get everything they want from the seasonal fruit to the tiny baked-in-house cinnamon rolls. For more information or to make a reservation, call 684-8686.
Hello, this is Michael reading additional articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Thursday, June 16, 2022. Deputy Superintendent to Leave MISD to Move Closer to Home, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD Deputy Superintendent Craig Cuellar is leaving the district. MISD made the announcement this week that Cuellar has accepted an executive leadership position in Spring, which is located in the Houston area. As many of you know, Houston is home for me and my wife's family, Cuellar wrote in an email to principals this week. Cuellar was one of Superintendent Angelica Ramsey's additions last summer, along with Associate Superintendents Charles Garcia and Luz Martinez. Officially, Cuellar was Deputy Superintendent of Learning, Leading, and Innovation. The position replaced the Chief Academic Officer position and led a team at the District Service Center, expected to provide support and leadership to the campuses, MISD previously noted. He came to Midland with more than 20 years of experience in a variety of educational roles, including serving as Deputy Superintendent of Instruction and School Communities for Portland Public Schools, according to a previous Reporter Telegram article. In his letter to principals, he called his experience in Midland ISD second to none. I am confident MISD will have continued success as we have seen significant strides this past academic year, Cuellar wrote in the letter. I am so proud of what you, your teachers, and school teams have accomplished this year in the midst of many challenges our district faced. Thank you again for everything and making this experience incredible for me in every way. Bridge strike closes I-20 lane. From staff reports. Texas Department of Transportation officials announced Wednesday that an Interstate 20 lane was closed because of a bridge strike. TxDOT officials reported that the westbound outside lane of I-20 in Midland County was closed to clean damage from a bridge hit at South County Road 1150, Tank Farm Road in East Midland. Around 2 p.m., TxDOT officials reported the lane was opened up again. State news. First poll since Uvalde shooting. Gubernatorial race tightens. By Kate McGee, The Texas Tribune. A new Quinnipiac University poll released Wednesday shows the Texas gubernatorial race has tightened between Governor Greg Abbott and Democratic nominee Beto O'Rourke in the wake of the mass shooting at a Uvalde elementary school where 19 children and two adults were killed. The poll, the first to come out since the May 24th shooting, found that 48% of registered Texas voters polled prefer Abbott, while 43% preferred O'Rourke. That has narrowed slightly from a December Quinnipiac poll in which 52% of the registered voters who responded said they would vote for Abbott versus 37% who chose O'Rourke. The race tightens, Quinnipiac University polling analyst Tim Malloy said in a press release Wednesday. Abbott, considered strong on leadership, slips. O'Rourke, considered long on empathy, rides the momentum of support from women and young Texans in the horse race to Austin. In December, 60% of voters polled said Abbott would do a better job of managing gun policy issues, and 33% said O'Rourke would do a better job on the issue. But that number tightened dramatically in the poll released Wednesday, with 47% of voters polled now saying Abbott would handle gun issues better versus 43% for O'Rourke. Since the shooting, Abbott has called on multiple state agencies to improve school safety. He tasked the Texas School Safety Center with performing random safety audits of school buildings, called on the legislature to convene committees to discuss legislative solutions, called for active shooter training for school districts, and directed the Texas Education Agency to create a new school safety and security position. But he hasn't suggested potential solutions that would restrict access to firearms. The poll found that 38% of respondents approved of Abbott's handling of gun violence. According to the poll, a slight majority, 51%, of Texas voters believe stricter gun laws would decrease the number of mass shootings, compared with 42% who thought such laws would make a difference in last June's poll. According to the poll, 58% of voters support stricter gun measures in the United States. 93% support requiring background checks for all gun buyers. And 73% support raising the minimum legal age to buy any gun nationwide. But only 47% support a nationwide ban on assault weapons. Texans take a hard look at a harrowing series of mass killings and signal it's time to put more teeth into gun laws. Though when it comes to assault weapons, there is a near even split on whether to outlaw their ownership, Malloy said. While border policies and the economy remain some of the top most important issues to Texas voters, gun policy has been rising. In Quinnipiac's December poll, abortion was the third most important issue for voters after the border and the economy. In Wednesday's poll, gun policies edged out abortion as the third most urgent issue. Overall, neither Abbott nor O'Rourke is overwhelmingly liked by voters polled. 46% have a favorable opinion of Abbott versus 45% who have an unfavorable opinion of him. 38% have a favorable opinion of O'Rourke, while 43% have an unfavorable opinion of him. This is the energy and oil page. Oil demand to grow, though rate ebbs, by Julian Lee, Bloomberg. Oil demand growth is set to slow in the coming months, with consumers likely to have endure high prices until consumption is brought back into line with supply that's struggling to keep pace with the world's thirst for fuels. The International Energy Agency, the U.S. Energy Information Administration, and the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries all see global oil demand growth falling back after a strong performance in the opening quarter of the year. But the Paris-based IEA is the only one to see growth flipping to shrinkage, and then only in the final quarter of the year. Even then, the drop is very modest at just 390,000 barrels a day compared with the same period in 2021. The EIA sees demand growth getting weaker quarter by quarter, but remaining positive throughout the year. OPEC takes a more bullish view. While demand growth halves between the first and second quarters, the oil producers group expects that consumption will continue to increase year on year by more than 2 million barrels a day throughout the remainder of 2022, even in a world that looks likely to face persistently high end user prices. Of the three agencies, OPEC is the only one that sees global oil demand back at its pre-pandemic level in 2022. Annual average demand forecasts from the IEA and EIA both see consumption this year lagging behind 2019 by about 1 million barrels a day. Within the global totals, one important difference emerges. While OPEC sees Chinese demand increasing by 2% this year, the IEA sees it going in the opposite direction, shrinking by 1% in the face of rolling lockdowns as the country prioritizes a zero COVID policy over the economy. There is much closer agreement in other areas, with both the IEA and OPEC seeing India's demand increasing by 6 to 7%, and that of the countries of the former Soviet Union, dominated by Russia, contracting by about 4%. Supplies are struggling to keep pace with demand. The IEA sees total non-OPEC output sharply down in the second quarter compared with the first, with an increase in the U.S. more than offset by a drop in Russian output and a decline in production by the other non-OPEC countries, largely the result of a stoppage at the CPC export terminal used by Kazakhstan and a subsequent closure of its second biggest producer for planned maintenance at the start of June. Production growth should recover in the third quarter, with higher output expected from Kazakhstan, continued growth in the U.S., and only a small drop in Russian production. That all changes in the fourth quarter, when Russian production is seen falling sharply, probably triggered by the implementation of EU sanctions on its seaborne crude exports, which are due to come into force in December. The slump in Russian oil production outweighs slowing, but still positive, growth in the rest of the non-OPEC world. By this time, the OPEC Plus output agreement, which has overseen the slow return of more than 10 million barrels a day of supply removed at the height of the pandemic in early 2020, will have come to an end. Producers have not yet decided what they will do after August, when the final barrels will be added back to individual output targets. Most members are already producing at or close to their capacity levels, and the group as a whole is falling further behind its overall output target each month. The 10 OPEC countries that are part of the deal were pumping almost 1.1 million barrels below their combined target of 25,589 million barrels a day in May, according to figures from the group. Forecasters are also struggling to get grips with Russian oil production. OPEC has reduced its outlook for the country, cutting average 2022 production by 250,000 barrels a day from its previous forecast. It now sees output falling year on year by 200,000 barrels a day. That's modest when put alongside the IEA's forecast, but the group does warn that it's subject to high uncertainty. Having initially seen a big hit to Russian production from consumer reactions to its invasion of Ukraine, the IEA is now rolling back the deep cuts it saw in its earlier forecasts. The sharp drop in production of about 3 million barrels a day that it saw back in March has been replaced with the more gradual choking off of some supply. It now sees Russian production falling to 9.38 million barrels a day by the fourth quarter and dropping further in early 2023. Moscow's ability to divert seaborne crude exports to India has helped it to maintain production levels in the face of self-sanctioning of its oil by former European buyers. But Russian production is coming down. OPEC puts the drop at 964,000 barrels a day between March and April, followed by a small rebound of 152,000 barrels a day in May. The IEA sees a similar pattern. That falling supply in an environment of continued demand growth is keeping upward pressure on oil prices, and that is likely to continue until they rise high enough to choke off demand growth and perhaps even send it into reverse. Oil falls on Fed rate hike, signals of softening demand, by Julia Fanzeres, Bloomberg. Oil fell after the Federal Reserve delivered the biggest rate increase in almost three decades, and U.S. government reports showed signs of demand slipping. West Texas Intermediate settled below $116 for the first time in 2 weeks after the U.S. Central Bank confirmed market expectations by raising interest rates 75 basis points. Higher interest rates could lead to an economic slowdown and add headwinds to crude's recent rally. Earlier in the session, prices edged lower as U.S. crude production hit 12 million barrels a day for the first time since the start of the pandemic, while gasoline demand edged lower and is trailing seasonal norms. U.S. retail gasoline prices have repeatedly broken records, recently hitting $5 a gallon, and the latest U.S. government report shows signs that high prices are impacting consumption. This week, gasoline demand fell to its lowest seasonally since 2013, with the exclusion of 2020 when demand dropped due to COVID lockdowns. There is growing angst under the bull thesis, and each data point is going to be heavily scrutinized for evidence of demand falling off, said Rebecca Babin, senior energy trader at CIBC Private Wealth Management. This leaves the market susceptible to both large moves higher and lower as investors are on a knife's edge. High fuel prices are turning into an increasingly political issue as multiple efforts by the U.S. administration to cool energy costs have so far failed to stem the inflationary tide. President Biden wrote to U.S. oil refiners saying that record profits are not acceptable. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has fanned inflation after upending global trade flows and tightening crude and fuels markets. The International Energy Agency offered little hope for improvement in its monthly report, noting that oil supply will struggle to meet demand next year. China's economy showed a mixed recovery in May, with industrial production unexpectedly increasing while the property market continued to slump. Crude processing by the nation's refiners marginally increased last month, capped in part by bloated fuel stockpiles, while apparent oil demand slumped. Here is a related oil article from the Odessa American, published this Thursday, June 16th. Biden tells oil refiners, produce more gas, fewer profits. The Associated Press. President Joe Biden on Wednesday called on U.S. oil refiners to produce more gasoline and diesel, saying their profits have tripled during a time of war between Russia and Ukraine, as Americans struggle with record high prices at the pump. The crunch that families are facing deserves immediate action, Biden wrote in a letter to seven oil refiners. Your companies need to work with my administration to bring forward concrete, near-term solutions that address the crisis. Gas prices nationwide are averaging roughly $5 a gallon, an economic burden for many Americans and a political threat for the president's fellow Democrats going into the midterm elections. Broader inflation began to rise last year as the U.S. economy recovered from the coronavirus pandemic, but it accelerated in recent months as energy and food prices climbed after Russia invaded Ukraine in February and disrupted global commodity markets. The government reported on Friday that consumer prices had jumped 8.6% from a year ago, the worst increase in more than 40 years. The letter notes that gas prices were averaging $4.25 a gallon when oil was last near the current price of $120 a barrel in March. That 75-cent difference in average gas prices in just a matter of a few months reflects both a shortage of refinery capacity and profits that are currently at their highest levels ever recorded, the letter states. The American Petroleum Institute, which represents the industry, said in a statement that capacity has been diminished as the Biden administration has sought to move away from fossil fuels as part of its climate change agenda. While we appreciate the opportunity to open increased dialogue with the White House, the administration's misguided policy agenda, shifting away from domestic oil and natural gas, has compounded inflationary pressures and added headwinds to companies' daily efforts to meet growing energy needs while reducing emissions, API CEO Mike Summers said in a statement. Summers added, I reinforced in a letter to President Biden and his cabinet yesterday 10 meaningful policy actions to ultimately alleviate pain at the pump and strengthen national security, including approving critical energy infrastructure, increasing access to capital, holding energy lease sales, among other urgent priorities. The letter is unlikely to start a chain of events that would boost supplies. Refineries have gone through unprecedented, unplanned maintenance globally in the last 3 months, and there is an extreme shortage being felt across the globe, said Claudio Galimberti, senior vice president at Rystad Energy. And China's decision to limit its exports of oil products also contributed to the problem, he said. U.S. refiners cannot increase capacity beyond current levels, Galimberti said. If they could, they would have done it already. As Biden sees it, refineries are capitalizing on the uncertainties caused by a time of war. His message that corporate greed is contributing to higher prices has been controversial among many economists, yet the claim may have some resonance with voters. The president has harshly criticized what he views as profiteering amid a global crisis that could potentially push Europe and other parts of the world into a recession, saying after a speech Friday that ExxonMobil made more money than God this year. ExxonMobil responded by saying it has already informed the administration of its planned investments to increase oil production and refining capacity. There is no question that Russian President Vladimir Putin is principally responsible for the intense financial pain the American people and their families are bearing, Biden's letter says. But amid a war that has raised gasoline prices by more than $1.70 per gallon, historically high refinery profit margins are worsening that pain.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, June 16th. Shirley Dean Brown was born on June 27, 1937, in Colorado City, Texas, to Homer and Ella Bibby. Shirley attended school in Gorman, Texas, then family moved to Ira Ann, Texas. Shirley graduated as valedictorian of the class of 1955. After high school, she was employed by Ohio Oil Company, which later became Marathon Oil Company. Shirley also had worked at the Gorman Peanut Plant. In September 1958, she married Alton Ray Brown. They moved to Ira Ann, Texas in 1961. After retirement, they moved to Midland. Shirley is survived by husband Alton Ray Brown, son Wes Brown, daughter Denise Baker, son Darren Brown, daughter Connie Brown, and daughter Carrie Paulson, one brother Leroy Bibby, and one sister Wanda Faye Bibby, 8 grandchildren, and 12 great-grandchildren. Shirley is preceded in death by parents Homer and Ella Bibby, and one brother, Elvie Dell Bibby. Graveside services are to be Friday, June 17th, at 10:30 a.m. at Ira Ann Restland Cemetery. Funeral arrangements under the direction of Shafford Nichols Funeral Home in Crane, Texas. James Jimmy Ray, age 73, of Midland, passed away Sunday, June 12th. Family will be receiving friends Thursday, June 16th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Friday, June 17th, at 11 a.m. at Crestview Baptist Church. A graveside service will be held Saturday, June 18th, at 1 p.m. at Electra Memorial Park in Electra, Texas. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel.
Good morning, this is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, June 16th. Boil alert expected through Friday. Valve repair still needed near 42nd and Andrews. All Ector County and Odessa residents should have their water restored by late Wednesday night, but they likely still won't be able to drink it until sometime Friday, Odessa Utilities Director Tom Kerr said late Wednesday afternoon. Odessa city crews were able to finish up repairs on the 24-inch water line that broke Monday evening around 3:45 a.m., Wednesday, the process to recharge or replenish the city's water system began around 5 a.m., Kerr said. The city was taking their time, adding roughly 15 to 20 million gallons back into the system to reduce the risk of additional breaks, officials said. As of Wednesday afternoon, there was a manageable leak around a repair fitting at the site of the original leak at 42nd and San Jacinto Streets, Kerr said. On Monday, crews were unable to isolate the original leak because of a faulty valve that they tried to access from above ground, Kerr said. Because they were unsuccessful, the city was forced to shut down the city's water plant, which prompted a boil alert to be issued. Because of the new leak, Kerr said crews will likely have to dig 8 to 10 feet to reach and repair the valve at 42nd Street and Andrews Highway. Since the new leak is manageable, Kerr said, it was not an emergency situation, although it will be addressed soon. Asked if there could be another major break, Kerr said, there's always a potential, but they weren't anticipating one. There have been no other waterline leaks reported. A leak reported earlier Wednesday at 42nd Street and Bonham turned out to be related to a fire hydrant, Kerr said. If there are no further issues, Kerr said he plans to test the city's water Thursday morning, and if they show no dangerous bacteria or microbes within 24 hours, the boil alert will be lifted. Showering is safe, but people should still be conserving water as much as they can so as to not cause surges as the system is recharging, Kerr said. You shouldn't be watering your lawns, he said. Odessa Fire Rescue Chief John Alvarez said the city will continue operating its water distribution center in Building E on the grounds of the Ector County Coliseum Thursday, starting at 8 a.m. The number of people seeking water slowed down a bit Wednesday, Mayor Javier Hoven said. Any leftover water will likely be used to backfill those agencies that generously donated it, Alvarez said. Deputy City Manager Philip Urrutia said Medical Center Hospital has turned their water system back on and will be bringing their operations back online in stages. MCH issued a new release indicating operations will be mostly back to normal Thursday, including phasing in surgeries with the hope of a full schedule on Friday. All ProCare clinics and urgent cares will be open. City officials provided updates Wednesday morning to Representative Brooks Landgraf and officials from the Texas Department of Emergency Management and Texas Commission on Environmental Quality on the grounds of the Ector County Coliseum. In addition to Hoven, council members Mark Mata, Denise Swanner, and Mary Willis spent time in the command center. Following Wednesday's meeting, Landgraf said he spent Thursday at TDEM's Operations Center in Austin, coordinating with city officials to help ensure Odessa received the help it needed, most importantly, water. TDEM not only provided its own water, but worked with private sector partners like Home Depot, Lowe's, Red Cross and Meals on Wheels, he said. Alvarez said other private sector partners, including Coca-Cola and United Supermarket. Landgraf said circumstances had led to Odessa and Odessans becoming adept at handling crises. The community learned how to deliver services very efficiently at the mass COVID-19 vaccination clinic at Ratliff Stadium, Landgraf said. I'm seeing a lot of that groundwork playing out here, Landgraf said as driver after driver drove through Building E to pick up water. Unfortunately, we have gotten kind of good at disasters, but you'd certainly rather be prepared to handle those than not. Obviously, you'd rather not have disasters to begin with, but when they do come, you want to be able to meet the challenge, Landgraf said. I'm very proud of not only the government's, but the way that the community, the people in the community, have come together. I think we've seen a lot of really good neighborly acts of kindness all across Odessa. Odessans reach out to help others during crisis. It was late Tuesday night when Ashley Flores and her co-workers from the Odessa Chamber of Commerce received a text message asking if they were available Wednesday to help distribute water. Flores and a few of her co-workers answered yes as they teamed up with volunteers from First Connection Church to deliver water to those in need Wednesday morning. The water line break from Monday has plunged all of Odessa into a boil alert, forcing people to go without water. Flores and volunteers Wednesday were delivering water to elderly people ages 75 and up, as well as those who don't have a vehicle or have special needs. So far, we've made about 30 deliveries to people, Flores said. On the deliveries that I've made, it's been nice to get to talk to people because they seem like they were in need. Flores came in to First Connection Church to start helping distribute water at around 8 a.m. Wednesday. It's very gratifying, especially when you have to climb 3 flights of stairs with cases of water, Flores said. It makes you understand that you're doing this for people that are older. Seeing their faces light up when they answer their door is pretty amazing. Volunteer workers from the Odessa Chamber of Commerce teamed up with members from First Connection Church to help deliver water to those in need. The city of Odessa has provided the water for us, First Connection Church Pastor Don Weeks said. The assistant manager called, and we try to be regularly available to the city if there are needs or emergencies like with the freeze and other events. We talked to Philip Urrutia, and he asked if we could assist with the need for people who cannot get out of their homes, so we said yes and then started calling our church for volunteers, as well as our chamber, which has been wonderful to send us volunteers today. Week said there were about 20 volunteers from First Connection Church. We had 100 cases of water starting out, Week said. We're doing one per household. By around 10:30, Week said they had delivered to about 35 households. They were taking calls at First Connection Church until about 2 p.m. Wednesday. While the water was mostly delivered, those that were able stopped by First Connection Church for water. One of the people that helped was Herb Morgan, 87, who lived in Odessa for 47 years. It feels good to have water, Morgan said. You better believe it, I missed it the other day at the Ector County Coliseum. I got there a few minutes late and they had gone home. This week's water crisis hasn't been the first emergency the community of Odessa has faced recently, as the pandemic and last year's winter storms are still clear in people's minds. We've had a lot of challenges in our community, Weeks said. People are still stepping up to help each other. There's a verse in Galatians that says, "Don't grow weary in doing good," and I think that describes Odessa. Erica Lay of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce was another volunteer helping out Wednesday. The chamber is really big about helping out with the community, Lay said. Renee Earls asked if anybody can help with the distribution of water. So I'm always willing to help the community, especially the elders and handicapped. I brought my daughter along to help out. She was with her daughter, Addison Lay, Wednesday at First Connection Church. It feels good knowing that you're helping people in need, Addison said, who is going into sixth grade at Compass Academy. I'm thankful that our surrounding towns are helping out Odessa, Erica said. It just says a lot about West Texas. Quick hits, Juneteenth events. Black Cultural Council of Odessa will celebrate Juneteenth events through June 19th. Schedule of events are as follows. Today, 7 p.m., Dallas Black Dance Theater at OHS Performing Arts Center, 1301 North Dotsie Street. The Black Cultural Council of Odessa will also present the second annual all-white party featuring violinist Dominique Hammonds at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. Doors open at 9 p.m. Admission is $25 per person. Tickets may be purchased at the door. Pre-sale tickets available from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Thursday at Gavin Norris Law Firm, 413 North Grant Avenue in the Amerion Building. Friday, 6 p.m., annual Juneteenth program at Black Shear Auditorium, 8 p.m., Shouting Cheerleading by Welton, DJs Blue Boy and Demetrius, and LJ Eccles and Band and Youth Dance, all at Woodson Community Park. Saturday, 10 a.m., Youth in the Park activities, rolling video games, COVID workshop at Woodson Park, noon, picnic and the second annual Brotherhood Legends Car Club car show at Woodson. Car entry fee is $25. Bike club entry fee is $50. Deadline is June 14th. Prizes will be awarded. To enter, call 432-978-4443 or 817-648-2902. 2 p.m., proclamation of Velvet's Day at Blackshear Auditorium, followed by dedication of Velvet's historical marker. Velvet's musical tribute and Velvet's Endeavor reception hosted by Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Parade lineup at South Dixie Boulevard and I-20, 7 p.m. Parade route north on Dixie Boulevard to Murphy Street. Turn right on Murphy Street and go east to Murphy to Barrett Drive. Cash awards will be presented at the parade, 9:30 p.m. Hometown heroes will be honored at Woodson Park main stage. Honored heroes are Dorothy Nelms, Frizella Whitaker, and Lee Orick Beck Riddick. 10 p.m., music by DeKing of Trail Rides. Sunday, 3:30 p.m. to 6 p.m., gospel celebration with the Reverend Eddie Jenkins of Dallas at Bethlehem Baptist Church, 1000 West Clements Street. 8 p.m., The Blues is All Right at Woodson Park Main Stage. 9:30 p.m., Paul Cannon Band Concert and Youth Dance at Woodson Park. In addition, the annual Danny All Right Basketball Tournament will take place on the evening Friday and all day Saturday at Woodson Boys and Girls Club. The third annual Regina McKnight Volleyball Tournament will take place on the evening Friday and all day Saturday at the Ector Field House. The fifth annual 35 and Older Legends Juneteenth Basketball Tournament will start at 1 p.m. Sunday at the Woodson Boys and Girls Club. For more information, call BCCO at 432-853-1344 or 432-212-6700. To sign up for basketball tournament, call 432-978-8908, visit odessabbc.org or on the BCCO Facebook page. OC chooses downtown project contractor. The Odessa College Board of Trustees chose low bidder J.C. Roberts Construction as the general contractor for OC's downtown project at 222 East 4th Street during a special meeting Wednesday. The base bid was $2,977,240. Architect Cruz Castillo, president of JSA Architects, said the company said it would take 8 months, but they think it could be 10. Phase one will be a large green space, the two performance canopies, the entryway, the splash pad, the restrooms, and other items. So the main thing there is we are on budget. We have a contractor who is committing to 8 months of construction to get us to substantial completion. So if we are able to move forward with approval this evening, we will have our project up and functioning next summer, Castillo said. The project will probably start within the next 30 days. Board to interview District 7 applicants Monday. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees selected 8 applicants to interview for the District 7 board spot at their meeting Tuesday night. Superintendent Scott Murray said the applicants will be interviewed in closed session Monday night and the announcement of who is selected will be made at the regular board meeting Tuesday. Murray said those interviews will be conducted in closed session. Trustees also elected new officers who will take their spots at the next board meeting June 21st. The new president will be Steve Brown, vice president will be Carol Gregg, and the secretary will be Chris Stanley. During the workshop, Chief Financial Officer Deborah Otmers presented a budget update. Next week, she will present a budget for adoption and a 6 p.m. public hearing. The tax rate also will be discussed, but won't be adopted until September. It's anticipated that the overall tax rate will stay the same at 1.17792 per $100 valuation. The board recap said a school board in Texas is legally required to approve three separate budgets. The general fund budget, which is projected to be $338,720,000. The debt service budget projected at $27,547,576, and the school nutrition budget is at $18,115,065. All are balanced budgets. The highlight of the general fund budget came from the 2022-23 compensation plan, which trustees approved last month. Starting teacher salary raised to $58,750. In 2017 and 18, ECISD's starting teacher salary was $44,500. Everyone on the teacher pay scale will get a minimum increase of $2,000. 4% general pay increase at midpoint for hourly employees, campus-based and central office. 3% of midpoint pay increase for all professional employees, campus-based and central office. Raise minimum wage to $15 per hour. This is up from $10 per hour 2 years ago. The pay increases come at a cost of approximately $9.3 million to the district's budget, the recap said. During the discussion, it was noted the two largest expenditures by function are instruction, which is 60% of the general fund budget, and maintenance and operations, which is 10% of the general fund budget. Superintendent Scott Murray said home values have increased, but homestead exemptions have gone up. The state recommends that districts have at least 90 days' worth of reserve funds or fund balance, and ECISD plans to have 109, she said. On school nutrition, Otmers said every student is expected to get free meals, but they're hoping to sell a Gatorade, extra meal, or entree. Trustees moved to close session to discuss personnel issues and the appointment of a new board member for Position 7. After returning to open session, the board voted 6-0 to interview all 8 applicants at a special board meeting June 20th. The board will vote on the appointee during the regular meeting June 21st. Applicants are Randy Adams, James Drexler, Tony Hardesty, Dennis Jones, Travis Overton, John Rabinault, David Soville, and Robert Thayer. The board also heard that Alicia Sessions is the new president of Gale Pond Alamo Elementary. Sessions has been the assistant principal at Alamo the last 3 years and taught for 5 years at Austin Montessori, adding to her experience in choice schools. Adonica Galindo is the new principal at Gonzales Elementary. Galindo has 4 years of experience as the assistant principal at Ross Elementary, 7 years as a kindergarten teacher, 2 years as a campus curriculum facilitator, and 1 as an instructional coach. Dorothy Ortiz is the new principal at Milam Elementary. Ortiz just completed her first year as the assistant principal at Burnett Elementary. She also has experience as a middle school assistant principal and 1 year as a high school assistant principal to go along with 15 years as a classroom teacher, the recap said. Raquel Rodriguez is the new principal at Ross Elementary. Rodriguez is currently the assistant principal at Noel Elementary and has 10 years of experience as a special education teacher, 3 years as an instructional coach, and 2 years as a campus curriculum facilitator. Anthony Garcia will move to Odessa High School as principal from Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School, and Jessica Redman will move to Wilson and Young from Buse Elementary, the recap said. Mauricio Marquez was named as executive director of Leadership Responsible for Coaching and Mentoring Campus Leaders. He has been the principal at Odessa High School for the past 5 years, before that serving as a principal at Crockett Junior High for 7 years, Blackshear Elementary for 3 years, 2 years as an assistant principal at Burleson Elementary, and 4 years as a teacher at Ector Junior High. He was the Region 18 Outstanding Principal in 2021. Chelsea Reyes was named Executive Director for Guidance and Counseling. She was the Director of Guidance and Counseling for the past 2 years and served students as a school counselor for 7 years. It's an amazing slate of administrators that will do incredible work for our system, Murray said. In other business, trustees received an update on 2021-22 MAP, Measure of Academic Progress, results. MAP, taken by students 3 times each year, measures how much students grow from test to test during the year. Proficiency follows growth. MAP growth is one of ECISD's strategic plan indicators of success. In 2021, 50% of students hit projected growth measures. In 2022, 53% of students hit projected growth measures. With MAP, the 50th percentile represents a year of growth. Numbers higher than that indicate more than a year of growth. In K through 8th reading, students met and exceeded growth projection in 3 through 7, 10 and 11, and closed gaps significantly in kinder, 1st and 2nd. In K through 8th math, students hit and exceeded growth projections in all grades. Science, given for the first time, hit or exceeded growth projections in 3rd through 5th, 7th and 8th. Trustees also looked at a breakdown of specific student groups. The presentation can be seen at tinyurl.com/MU9F5BF5. Council approves grant for carbon capturing facility. During a 14-minute meeting Monday night, the Odessa City Council approved a $2.4 million grant for a carbon capturing facility, a $25,000 facade grant, and agreed to pass a resolution regarding Encore's rate increase proposal. Encore announced May 13 it intends to increase its rates in all cities it provides electricity to by a total of $251 million beginning June 17th. Residents could see an increase of 11.2% and street lighting rates would increase by 1.6%. The council passed a resolution asking Encore to suspend the rate increase, therefore giving a steering committee made up of multiple cities a chance to review the increase for 90 days. According to city officials, the steering committee was able to get Encore to reduce a proposed $98 million increase last year to $87 million. The council also approved a $2.4 million grant to Occidental Petroleum and its partners, which plans to build an $810 million plant near Pinwell that will remove 500,000 tons of carbon dioxide directly from the air. The plant will be the world's largest direct air capture project. Once the carbon dioxide is captured, the company 1.5 will solidify it, store it, and sell it. The company anticipates hiring a total of 125 employees over a 5-year period, resulting in a payroll nearing $23 million at the end of that time period. In other matters, the council agreed to give PAR II, an architectural and construction firm, a $25,000 grant for a new facade on its Grant Avenue building.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.